my mouth. It hurt to blink. My eyes would turn black. Didn't have time to assess the damage to my body, but I felt it all. Old wounds from fights in Antigua, London, Miami, and Buenos Aires danced. Fucking airbag had me trapped. Felt like I was in a chair being suffocated with a plastic bag. I didn't know what or who was outside the wrecked car, and I freaked out, growled, stabbed the airbag a dozen times to get free, then fought and kicked to get my jammed door open, and when it gave, I fell out of the car to the damp road, landed on bulletproof glass that hadn't withstood the crash as well as the frames of the automobiles. A light drizzle added to the snow that was having trouble sticking to the ground. I reached for my firearm. Didn't want to get gunned down. No one was on the road but me and the other car. It was 40 yards away and looked as fucked up as I felt. I scanned for the passengers of that car, looked for horsemen on the ground. Then I looked up at the windows, hunted for a sniper. I saw terrified people. Some came outside, but sensed danger and didn't come near. People in South America understood the ways of South America. Feeling like the wind was knocked out of me, I struggled to inhale, then struggled to exhale, fought pain, and looked for a horseman. I expected another car to appear, or someone else on a motorcycle. I made it to one knee, groaned and cursed like I had been in a fight with all the horsemen at once. The crash had destroyed both cars. Gun trained, I limped to the other AMG. It was upside down. The crash had blown the doors open. Medianoche wasn't in the other car. There had been only one horseman attacking me. I stabbed the airbag, and behind the wheel was Senorita Raven. The crash had her upside down, belted in, and unconscious. I pulled her out, dragged her away from the vehicle. Her face was bloodied, same as mine. Like bullets and bombs, the airbags weren't gender-biased. The aches and pains in my body made her feel heavy. She was a solid woman, weighed more than I had thought. After I made sure she was still alive, but hors de combat, gun in hand, I limped back to my wrecked AMG, opened the passenger door, and did the same for Foxy Brown. She was limp, disabled. Still carrying my gun, I did a painful jog toward the apartments. Right away, I stole a small blue van from inside the barrio, then sped back to the accident site. Both horsemen were out cold, same way I'd left them. I got them to the blue van. I grabbed hardware from the AMG I had been driving. I pulled out grenades and a rocket launcher, then hurried to get away. Both cars had caught fire. The fire from the accidents reached the armaments in Senorita Raven's car first, but not before I had tossed both wounded horsemen and the weapons into the van. Fire meant explosives. As her car erupted, I returned to the autopista and sped north. Behind me, the explosions from the luxury car I had been driving shocked Ciudad Evita. I had gifted unwarranted terror to the world behind me, but no one innocent had been hurt or died. They might be traumatized, but they were physically unharmed. It didn't matter to monsters, but that mattered to me. A second later, I heard the rise of sirens. Fire trucks raced toward the car crash and explosions. A squad of police were seconds behind them. Senorita Raven was still among the living. She struggled to breathe, but she was alive. I checked Foxy Brown for a pulse. The wreck had ended her suffering. Not long after, I cruised down Santa Maria del Buenare and pulled up in front of a ramshackle warehouse near Avenida Osvaldo Cruz in La Boca. I was less than 4 kilometers from the Plaza de Mayo and 2 kilometers from the nightlife in San Telmo. I was in Capital Federal, not far from the colored artist house at Caminito de la Boca, sneaking into the area known as the birthplace of the tango. The sector had dwellings as colorful as homes in the West Indies. Used to be a major shipyard. The stench told me of the years of neglect and pollution in the water. Near República de la Boca was where the horsemen had executed men and women who had worked for the con man, Scams. That had happened hours before I had arrived here with Shotgun and Constantine. Senorita Raven and Senor Rodriguez had laughed and tortured more than 9 people who were part of Scams' computer operations, then killed all but 2. One had played dead, survived, managed to drag himself away from the murder scene, losing more than 2 pints of blood along the way. From a hospital bed, he had called and told Scams his tale of horror. When we were en route, Scams had briefed us on the things the horsemen had done, the things the horsemen were willing to do to other human beings, made me feel like I could still become a saint. I whispered, "Whoever fights monsters risks becoming a monster. The concrete and wooden floors were marred, chipped, broken, and had been used to piss on and worse. Hooligans were hardcore football fans. They were worse than thugs. They drank and stood in public and pissed on the stairs and the hallways at La Bombonera, the Boca Juniors football stadium, so using the world as a toilet was par for the course. This wasn't the land of the rich, like Recoleta or Palermo. The pong of defecation was heavy duty, but my aches were stronger. Single-pane windows in the warehouse were filthy or broken. My face hurt and my lip was swollen. I carried Senorita Raven up a narrow staircase, each stair uneven and disgusting. Her long hair fell back from her face. Dots peppered her skin. Shrapnel. She was tall for a woman, and she was both solid and soft. There were 9 rooms, debris scattered all over, beer bottles, cigarette stubs, faint scent of weed. The scent of Paco, Argentina's version of crack, was powerful. Mold spread like kudzu, graffiti on every wall. An old wooden chair was in a corner. It was pretty clean. That chair was a tell. Before this roach nest was demolished, it was probably a place young hooligans brought naive girls, that chair being where the hooligan sat with his pants at his ankles, or where the girl pulled up her dress and got on her knees so she could doggy for 5 minutes. Paco a peso, I'd bet that any girl who came here was paid in some way. Winter air blew through shattered windows and underneath shabby wooden doors. With my breath fogging with every exhale, I grunted as I put Senorita Raven down, then backed away, tried to shake off my discomfort. I spied out the front window. La Boca was full of tenements, large families living in matchboxes, so everyone was always on the streets long past midnight. They hung out in the streets, ate in the streets, owned the streets, until the sun came up and they were forced to go to work and tolerate tourists. It wasn't a sector where judicious sightseers would wander after sundown. Even if tourists were in a taxi, they would get stopped and robbed for all they had. 10-year-old kids killed adults in the vichas. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did the same by the filthy river. Some porteñas never went to La Boca and Hooliganville at any time. This was their Chicago, Compton, Detroit, Memphis, Oakland, and St. Louis. I took a deep breath and dragged Senorita Raven across the stained concrete floor, pulled her through trash, then tied her down, secured her on a dilapidated wooden table. It had been raised to have her at about a 20-degree angle. It was the same table the horsemen had used to torture. The bloodstains on the floor were probably from the horsemen having fun. On the table was a hammer, a nail gun able to drive nails all the way through concrete, and nails strong enough to put Jesus on the cross. A blowtorch was there, too. So were a blade and a surgical scalpel. There was an IV line and a bucket, large enough to hold the blood from a cow. The London arms dealer had come through once again. I took out my phone. I turned on music. I put on James Brown. He sang, "Bad Mother." After I tended to my nose, I turned to YouTube and played the best of Curtis Mayfield, Move On Up, Pusher Man, Superfly, and Freddy's Dead. Played before I turned to her. I took out a secondary weapon, a simple .22. I shot her in the leg. Popped her in the thigh of her bulletproof Colombian suit. She jerked back into this world. Yelled, eyes wide, in a panic. She returned to consciousness, only to find herself in an unescapable nightmare. Her chest rose and fell as her eyes adjusted to her new reality. The horseman scowled like she had the migraine of all migraines. The hate glowing in her brown eyes told me I didn't need to introduce myself. As Curtis Mayfield sang, "The Makings of You," I said, "Your Senorita Raven." "Be advised." Her lips parted, the dark lipstick causing them to stick for a second, and I saw the small gap between her teeth. "I am the executive officer of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse."
"Oh, are we exchanging business cards?"
"Sorry, I don't have one."
"I am a horseman. I am a leader. I am prepared to give my life in their defense. I will never surrender of my own free will. None of us will. I will make every effort to escape. I will accept no special favors."
The soldier with the high cheekbones pulled her lips in tight, and her nostrils flared as she tested her restraints. I looked down at a dirty newspaper on the floor. Headline talked about the worldwide panic and Argentina's president, Fernandez de Kirchner, having a measly 29% approval rating. She blamed blue-eyed white people for the problems of the world. Senorita Raven kept fighting the restraints. She stopped. She realized she wasn't going anywhere. Not unless I wanted her to leave. I went to her, loosened her black necktie. I owned her, the same way they had owned the men and women they had tortured and killed when they were trying to defeat scams. She cursed me like only a military person could, then said, "I'll kill you." She caught her breath, gathered her strength, and struggled again. She did that twice more before she surrendered. Perspiring, she looked me in the eyes, enraged, belligerent. I asked, "Why did you swerve? If you wanted to kill me, and you're prepared to give your life, why did you swerve? Why didn't you crash into me head on doing 100? "Because you had a horseman in the car. I wouldn't kill her to capture you. Horsemen are not disposable. They are not bullet catchers. You swerved, barely missed me, lost control, flipped over at least 6 times. I lost control too, spun out, but didn't flip, and hit a pole. Airbag got the best of me. Hit me like Tyson." I picked up the water hose. Freezing water flowed. I put a towel over her face, and that caused her to pull at her restraints. She pulled like she expected to turn into the Hulk. She screamed. I let the glacial water flood over the cloth. That ended the screaming. She kicked, fought to breathe, but was immobilized. Instead of screaming, she should have held her breath. Then I stopped, let her breathe through the damp cloth, each inhale filling her lungs with water. I said, "I know you've had SEER training, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. So have I. But now, you're in my world. There is no Geneva Convention. I can treat you the way you treated my friends. We were guests in this country, and from the moment we landed, you were not nice. Not at all. I can now treat you with the same barbarism inflicted upon me and my homies by lawless thugs wearing bulletproof suits while they peppered us with bullets and grenades." "You think you're Medianoche's goddamn son?" I was nice. I gave him a Father's Day card and a classic novel as a present. That was my first time ever buying a Father's Day card. "He's rejected you. He hates you like he hates no other. You think I give a shit? Fuck Medianoche. Damn the man who had a hand in creating me. I doubt if it was his hand in your French whore for a mother. Let's see how long that sense of humor holds up. That's who you think you are, his son." I told her, "This is my first time doing this." "You want to be his son so fucking bad, it's killing you." I paused. "You deserve this. You deserve worse. You scum. You had no right coming here, interfering in our affairs. You should have joined NATO. You could have invoked Article 5. I think that's when member states have to come to the aid of any member state subject to an armed attack. Fuck you. No. You're fucked." She struggled to breathe through the saturated cloth. She was underwater, on dry land. Adrenaline and overload, she pulled at the restraints hard enough to break her bones. Soon, she breathed like her lungs were damaged. She shivered. She knew the dangers of waterboarding. New brain damage wasn't far away. The same for death. I said, "I'm not going to drown you. This is only the appetizer." She coughed, gagged. Strong woman. A warrior. She'd never surrender. I said, "I'm going to drain your blood. You're going to bleed to death in slow motion. After you lose 3 liters of blood, there will be no turning back. Up to that, you can probably survive." She turned her head, regurgitated, coughed, wheezed, then fought to get a teaspoon of air. I said, "I know 22 ways to kill a man. I've only done this form of bloodletting once. I tracked a member of the Mexican cartel to Juneau, Alaska. I'd rather pop and be done with it." I moved the damp cloth from her face, She wheezed, chest rose and fell like she was in distress, in insurmountable pain. I didn't care. They had killed my friend. I wanted to do this to all of them. To defeat them, I had to become one of them. Kindness never defeated evil. Kind men facing evil were sent to graves while they were still young. She fought to get air, coughed, and her words were strained.
Wait, wait, wait!
What am I waiting on? Godot? Is this supposed to have a logical conclusion?
Don't do this. Please, don't do this.
I'm listening. She swallowed, made a face like breathing was nothing but excruciating pain. She managed to say,
There's a lot you don't know.
Tell me.
A lot you don't know. There's a lot Medianoche doesn't know.
Talk and let's be done with this bullshit.
I know about Margaret. I know about Thelma. I know about Medianoche and the Beast. I know things that you don't know. I know shit that nobody knows but me. If you kill me, the truth you want, it dies with me. I can tell you about the Beast and your mother.
I shook that off, said, maybe I'll be better without the truth. The truth is just a burden. She found wind, coughed, then panted.
He raped me.
I paused. Who raped you?
The man you think is your father, Medianoche. He raped me, and I might be pregnant.
Liar.
Don't do this. He threw money in my face like I was a slut, and he raped me.
Desperate liar.
I will tell you something, something no one knows. I've never spoken it out loud.
Make it good.
I was raped in the military by one of the soldiers on my own team. It would have been pointless to report the assault. 1 in 5 are raped, and it's rarely prosecuted, and a conviction would be unlikely. I was raped, and I set a bomb. I set an IED to kill that hyper-masculine, trigger-happy, ignorant redneck from Nacogdoches, Texas, and I only wanted to kill him, but I accidentally killed others as well. I killed him, my comrades, and almost killed myself.
I gave her rag more freezing water. She fought, delirious, struggled to breathe, couldn't scream, and drink water at the same time. She wheezed that she wanted to live, or she wanted death to come faster. It had to be horrible to want to live and not be able to want to die and not have control. That was what torture was about. She had broken down. She was broken. I said, your new team killed my friend. When we fought days ago, when you bombed and destroyed the Vicious, he let you live. We had the briefcase. We had both of them, and he could have killed you in the Visha, could have blown your head off, but he let you live. He was a fair man. She coughed.
Why didn't you kill Medianoche then? Everything after is your fault.
That wasn't my mission. I was hired to get the second briefcase, not kill Medianoche. Bullshit. You had him. You let him live. You're weak. You're soft. You punked out. I rocked. Was being strangled, renditioned by my truth.
Because he's what?
He's my father.
I could fight him. I fought him.
It was my best fight, and it wasn't easy. But I beat him. I suffered a beating, but I beat a legend. I beat the monster that lived inside of my head. He tried to kill me, and he failed. But I couldn't kill him, no matter what he had done.
You're afraid of him. You saw him and became the little boy. He was afraid of his father.
He's Mr. Midnight. In my mind, Mr. Midnight has always been larger than life.
You idolized him.
The way people idolize the devil, he was my goddamn boogeyman.
Scared little boy, you didn't kill him then, and you won't do a damn thing now.
It's not easy for a man to kill his father. At least it's not for me. Every boy wants a father. I put others in the grave, but that was business. Those were contracts. I'm not a murderer. Anyone I sent to the pearly gates was a contract or trying to put me in an unmarked grave.
Hypocrite. Coward.
No, it makes me human. I haven't lost my humanity. Not all of it. Most, but not all. I was focused. Only killed my targets. Only attacked my enemies. Like drone attacks, you killed innocent people on the street. 14 people died on the streets because of your bombs. 14.
You killed a dozen people in the Vicious.
two-bit soldiers who were armed by you and contracted to kill all of us. You're no different than I am. You ain't no different. I'm no phony. I don't drape what I do in any country's flag and call it righteous. I remembered when I had gone to handle Thelma, my mother, before she had taken the name Catherine. She was still a working woman then. I hunted her down, wanted to put her down for what she had done to me, and I was unable to follow through. She was my mother. She had another son by then. That meant I had a brother who needed protecting. That kinship bonded us and protected her from the darkness inside of me. It protected her from the midnight in my soul. I said, I do what I'm paid to do. No more, no less. I've exterminated in self-defense and for pay, but I've never, never hunted someone down for personal vengeance. Not until now. I'm the monster you created. You are the one who murdered my best friend on the goddamn train. Señor Rodriguez, it wasn't murder. That was business. Rodriguez was business. He would have killed me, Arizona, Shotgun, Constantine, and anyone else who stood in the way. Don't you dare say his name with a goddamn smile on your face. He was my friend. You killed soldiers, your own comrades. You set a bomb and blew them the fuck up, probably got a medal for it. And you're upset about me killing a thug who was trying to kill me? I killed my goddamn rapist during the darkest night with the moon shining bright. I killed a man who had raped me and stopped him from doing the same to any other enlisted woman. You lost the plot. I watched the bastard step on the IED and get blown into 1,000 pieces. He was a low IQ, immature piece of shit. He would throw flash and bang in the John when people were on the crapper. Had no respect for me, yet wanted to fuck me. I showed him. I was too close to the IED, but with my injuries, no questions were asked. Not one. I bet the Taliban was blamed. You probably blamed bin Laden himself. 4 died after that bomb exploded. Soldiers had a field day. Men had died, and other men went ballistic, were terrified, in a rage, and killed men, women, children, cats, and dogs. They killed dogs to keep them from eating the dead. You have no idea the things I've seen. You're crazy. Not crazy. Swimming in many levels of PTSD, but I never fall apart. The things we do for revenge, the things we do so we can sleep better at night. Sooner or later, I do the same thing to the man you think is your father. I've dreamed that dream every night. Every day, I'm loyal to him, as I am loyal to all soldiers. But at night, I dream about killing Medianoche. The man I think is my father. Sooner or later, he'll sit at his desk and find a Russian pressure plate under his chair. Sooner or later. He has it coming. He has no remorse. None whatsoever. He has no compassion. He married 3 women, and I feel sorry for each one of them. It had to be horrible being his wife. Why stay with the group? Because this is all I have. I want to take over and control the horsemen. I want to wear the red tie and sit at the CO's desk. But I have to learn from the best. Medianoche is the best. He is to killing what Marlon Brando was to acting. When he has a gun in his hand, it is like watching an artist. Medianoche, the warrior, is the ultimate alpha male. He inspires others. He influences men, makes them want to be like him. He understands war, understands what it takes to win, more than anyone I have ever met. I have fought by his side. I have studied him. You mimic him. I have mimicked him in all ways possible. You love him. Don't insult my soul. You sleep with him. He assaulted me. I won't go into detail. He created a hostile work environment. He's choked me, attacked me, struck me. You've stayed, but you are dying for revenge. Best served cold. Best served cold. I like mine hot. All she had said had been emotional. Her anger was powerful. Her disdain was real. I popped my lips, the same way the arms dealer in London had done when she was thinking. I didn't believe 2 words from my captive's mouth. I couldn't afford to have empathy for my enemy. But like a man had done in London, she had wormed inside my head. I whispered, I watched Mr. Midnight try to kill my mother. That changed me. And you popped him in the left eye with a .22. That changed him. I cleared my throat. You're complex. I am very complex. You've been through a lot since I was born in St. Louis. Maybe more than me. Our roads have led us here. You don't know my pain. You don't know my triggers.
Your what?
Triggers.
Oh, triggers. Okay.
I popped my lips.
I feel bad for you.
I don't want your sympathy. What has happened to me doesn't define me.
The others in your battalion, your friends, were collateral damage.
Sometimes you have to destroy a village to meet your objective.
Drone mentality. Drones are effective. They make others keep away from your enemy. Anyone who stands with your enemy is also your enemy, like the men across the river are our enemies. The men from Uruguay.
They befriended you, allowed you to pass through their country. Their day will come. I'd carpet bomb them to kill that puta Bejarena.
I popped my lips again. Tell me what you know about Margaret.
You first. What do you know?
She was my mother's best friend. That's all I know. Because of a lie, I used to think that Margaret was my mother. Never saw a picture of her, just know she's dead. They found her body in a dumpster.
Is that right?
She was killed in North Carolina, by medianoche, by midnight. I have no idea why.
Hadn't heard that one about Margaret the Jamaican.
Not what I read in the files.
Jamaican? From Montego Bay. Margaret was her whore name. Thelma was the designation your mother used. Margaret took her name from Margaret Thatcher. You didn't know?
Tell me what I don't know. Tell me about Thelma, the Beast, and medianoche.
Fuck you.
Where's the horseman called the Beast? Is he really dead?
You're the Beast. Motherfucker, look in the mirror. You're the goddamn Beast. You walk like a beast. You talk like a beast.
I stood and picked up the damn cloth. She had talked, rambled, argued, so she could breathe. I said, I've always been a beast. Now I've upped my game and I'm something less than human, but a man capable of being as vicious as an animal. The horseman did this. I know a horseman has found my mother and my brothers.
They're dead. Three more coffins, one large, two small.
I turned the water hose on again, faced her, and as she struggled in vain to break her restraints, I whispered,
every war is the same. It starts off being about something, but soon it devolves into the need to win. Every war loses focus, takes on a life of its own. So here we are. Only one of us can win. Otherwise, the war continues. Sorry for what I'm about to do, but this is what you deserve. For Shotgun. For my mother. For my brothers. For the innocent comrades you killed with an IED. She struggled. Then I let the calm arrest her.
I spoke assuredly. As your blood soars out of you, Senorita Raven, your body will try to counterbalance for the gradual loss. Your heart will beat faster and try and get oxygen to your tissues. You'll get weak, feel lightheaded, drunk, then turn pale. Your skin will stop feeling warm. You will be on the way to becoming as cold as your heart. Don't worry. That's only the first level. Three levels to go. When you've lost about 30% of your blood, around 3 pints, there will be no other way out and you will need a blood transfusion. I think that I'm remembering this right. I might be off by a pint. And the blood that came out of you, that will be no good. It's a one-way trip. The bleeding will be deplorable and unpardonable. Your heart will start working overtime, straining to get enough oxygen to tissues. You will feel weaker. Your blood pressure will drop. There aren't any machines here to tell you where you are, but you will know. Everything inside of you will be fighting to keep you alive. The body is designed that way. Smaller blood vessels will constrict and try to force the blood to circulate. They will do that to keep the circulation going, but you will still be bleeding. After you've lost 40% of the red fluid that keeps you alive, it will be pretty fucked up. You might need help restarting your heart, the kind of help you can only get in a hospital. The distress in your body's circulatory system, you won't survive. Not long from now, your heart will no longer be able to maintain blood pressure and circulation. You know what happens next? Everything starts to shut down. It's your end. You'll see death standing in the corner. Organs will fail one by one. You'll fall into a coma. Then you will die. The same way my friend, my best friend, died. But your death will not be as quick. You will feel it to the end. You will know what it's like to die, one drop of blood at a time. I went to the other equipment, pulled it and the bucket closer. She said,
don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. I took a breath. Be honest.
What do you want to know?
If I let you go, would you one day come after me?
That would be my mission. You killed my best friend,
I barked. You killed mine.
And he killed three of my soldiers,
I asked. Would you go after my family?
There is no way to turn this around. We are too far gone.
Your family, the Russian, the scams organization, and especially you, in Medianoche will only get more horsemen. There will always be more horsemen. Always.
Then you leave me no other choice. To defeat evil, you have to become evil.
To defeat a horseman, you must behave like a horseman. The process began. The fluid of life drained from her. She watched for a moment, then turned her head, stared at the ceiling, nostrils flared, teeth tight. Her lip trembled. A tear fell from her left eye, then her right. I whispered, "You're 2 pints short." Soon, she shook like she saw the Grim Reaper standing in the corner, pointing his scythe at her. She trembled the way I did when I was a child and had nightmares about Mr. Midnight. It also reminded me of when I was killed in London. Gun in hand, I went to one of the filthy windows, spied down on the dirty streets, looked to see if horsemen had tracked her. The silence and knowing she couldn't escape finally broke her. She lost it, screams, "No, no, 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 no!" I am the wrong one to fuck with. You will soon meet a room of people who learn the same lesson. Politicians, rappers, an assassin with a broken nose, and other horsemen. Tell them Gideon said hello. Chapter 27. Last exit. Before death. Alvin White had told me and my brothers, a man has to learn to stand his ground or get buried in the ground he's standing on. That stayed with me as I drove past San Telmo. Only one thing was on my mind. I sped down Jose Antonio Cabrera in Palmero Viejo, zoomed by stands selling La Nacion. I drove as far as San Isidro Cathedral, then came back toward the Hilton in Puerto Madero. I crisscrossed La Reina del Plata. No one followed me. No one attacked me in La Ciudad de la Feria. Had to be sure I was safe. It was just me, my paranoia, and my guns against a league of madmen and their guns. Not long after, I was on Francisco Acuña de Figueroa, coming up on the Sanatorio Güemes building. The building where the horsemen kept their quarters was close. I navigated what felt like rush hour at 1 in the morning, avenues filled with cars, buses, and radio taxis, then pulled the van into a parking garage on the nearest corner. I smelled empanadas, but the scent wasn't as profound as the stench from the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. I smelled Las Cuatro Jinetes del Apocalipsis, the aroma stronger than fear. I gathered weapons I had tossed into the stolen van. I had saved an M84 stun grenade. I had also saved a flash grenade. It wasn't much, but it was all I had. I adjusted my suit, put on the red tie I had found in the Mercedes, put on the overcoat, eased on a fedora. The hat had been in the Mercedes too, recovered after the crash, then tossed into this van. I padded my pockets to make sure I had what was most important. The black card that I had taken from Foxy Brown was in my inside suit pocket. At first I had thought it was a credit card, but it was a card like a hotel key. It opened gates and doors, no fingerprint required. Only a fool would attack a country on its own soil. Only a fool. I became part of the night, on the hunt for soldiers and psychopaths. I became a fool. The card opened the security gate without a hitch. 2 guards in the booth looked up, saw a man dressed like a horseman. By the time they realized I wasn't one of the maniacs in black, they had been hit with flash and bang. As they stood blinded, I eased out a gun, attached the suppressor, and sent both to a permanent sleep. The gate closed behind me. I headed down the walkway to the building, shooting out security cameras as I moved toward my final destination. I had to get to the 17th floor. I thought about flying the Cessna, then bailing out, but that would have been a suicidal move. As I floated toward the building on a parachute, they could have had target practice, and that would have been all she wrote. I swiped the door to the edifice. The light turned green. I went inside, headed toward the elevators. The ones the horsemen used were around the corner. Before I could make it that far, another security guard came from that direction. He was as big as the Hercules I had seen earlier at Las Violetas. I had my gun trained on the center of his head. He dared me to put the gun down and fight him hand to hand. He called me a chicken. He called me a coward. My body ached from the car crash, from having so many fights to the death. Fighting was the last thing I needed to do. I could kill him and be done. But I would always wonder if I could have kicked his ass. No one was here to talk my ego down. I took my fedora off, eased out of my overcoat. I put my weapons to the side. Wearing brass knuckles, I told the big, muscular motherfucker to bring it. He came at me hard, threw a vicious left jab paired with a right cross, but my right hand went out fast, caught him on the chin. He staggered, didn't like that. He threw a haymaker, a punch meant to knock my head into the middle of the next millennium. It was a death blow. He missed, but kept swinging. I bobbed and weaved, each of his blows missing me by a hair, each getting closer. Each miss frustrated him and made him swing harder, faster. The powerhouse threw 21 punches in less than 10 seconds, and like Muhammad Ali had done with Michael Doakes, I dodged them all. He was winded and tried to restart his rampage, but in that 1 second break, my right went out fast, caught his chin. Then my left hook went to say hello to that same chin. I wore knuckle busters made of iron. I'd hurt both hands fighting Medianoche. My hands couldn't take a bare-knuckle brawl. I hit him hard, and it was a 1-2 combination. Then caught him with a roundhouse kick that made his face turn on his neck like he was part owl. He looked groggy, didn't know what had hit him. He refused to go down and stay down. He staggered at me like he wanted to catch me in a bear hug to keep me from beating him. And I gave him the uppercut from hell. I went at him with a controlled flurry, became Sugar Ray taking down Tommy Hearns. I treated him to lightning-fast left hooks. I hit him so hard, I thought his neck had snapped. He was dead on his feet. And I laid in, gave him hard, accurate punches, switched up, and gave him elbows and knees, made his face a bloody mask. I beat him like I had Shotgun's spirit giving me guidance. Blood gushed from the guard's nostrils, but he refused to fall. I hit him hard, and his features morphed as his neck hyperextended. His face was broken. It was lights out for him. But I was on fire, kept swinging as he fell, connected more times before the pavement abruptly stopped his fall. I stomped his groin, tried to shatter his nuts. There were no rules. There was no referee. This was a fight until the end. I pounded him, attacked his face, stomach, arms, tried to make each punch deliver 2,000 pounds of pressure. I pounded his head, punched his brain, until he looked like no man I'd ever met. I pounded him. Remembered a monster beating my mother. A monster they called Mr. Midnight. He was trying to choke the life out of her. That was something a child never forgot. He screamed at her and was killing her. He had her by the neck, her body raised sky high. My mother was naked and kicking and suffocating as he ragdolled her around the room, kicking over lamps as she clawed at his hands, kicking like I was punching, like I was an army man, a man who jumped out of planes, a man who had sniper training, a man who wanted to kill the man on the ground in front of me as badly as Mr. Midnight wanted to kill my mother. I tried to beat my history out of my body and into that man's face. The first time I had shot a man, when I thought I had killed Mr. Midnight, I asked my mother if I'd done wrong. A man had tried to kill my mother, and I had killed him in return, and was afraid I would get a spanking. I was a child, confused, afraid, and I remembered that moment. I was scared because I had gotten out of bed when I knew I wasn't supposed to. Did I do a bad thing? Some people deserve to die, Catherine had said when she was still Thelma, then shook her head. Your daddy told me that bad people need to die. It makes the world a better place. I had saved my mother. I felt like a superhero. I was proud of myself. Now I realized that she was the bad person my father was trying to kill. Mr. Midnight was the man she told me was my father. My father had become a madman and wanted her dead. He had told her that while he tried to choke the life out of her. He had screamed that some people deserve to die, and killing people like her, bad people like her, made the world a better place. I beat my opponent until that memory left me alone, until it let me be. My bloodied opponent was done, but I wasn't finished. Once upon a time, I walked away from my first enemy, only to have him resurrected. I wasn't going to be careless and walk away without being sure evil was deep in its grave. I was a gladiator in a Colombian suit, a bloody mess after the gruesome fight. When an opponent stepped into the ring and challenged my life, I was a merciless warrior. Panting, I grabbed him by his hair, took out my blade, and without pause, I pulled my blade across his throat, gave him a Colombian necktie. Then I stood over him, wheezing, my body still in a state of disrepair from fighting Medianoche days ago, here in the heart of the slums of another corrupt South American dystopia. My breathing evened out, and I stood still, my trigger finger moving back and forth. They could have killed scams bit by bit every day for the rest of their lives, but they never should have gone after Shotgun or my family. By now, a horseman had found my mother and brothers. They would learn that I was the last man on Earth they wanted dying for revenge. I picked up my coat, my jacket, my weapons. I eased my suit coat on, adjusted my necktie, then eased my fedora back on. Became Mr. Bespoke. I went to the horseman's private elevator. I swiped the black card. A green light came on, and the elevator door opened. A soft, feminine, programmed voice announced, "Piso cero." I stepped inside and felt like I was trapped in a coffin. I didn't know who or what would greet me when the doors opened again. I shot my hand out before the door closed, and it opened again without a problem. I stepped off. To the right was an unmarked door. I went there, used the black card, swiped, and the door unlocked. I opened the door on a stairwell. The elevator could rise, then drop back to the earth. But when the door opened, I could be greeted the same explosive way I had greeted Hercules and Foxy Brown at Las Violetas. I took the stairs, went floor by floor, shot out security cameras along the way. I would pull the sword from the stone, or I would die trying. Chapter 28, Piso 17. 17 levels, maybe 30 steps between floors. Legs burned like fire. No booby traps had been in the stairwell, but that didn't mean there wasn't a silent alarm. The black card opened the door on the floor 18 stories above the ground, and I eased out, the barrel of a gun loaded with RIP bullets leading the way. No one greeted me. All I heard was music. Last night, when we were young, a Frank Sinatra song, the kind aging men listened to reminisce. There were four apartments on the floor. I expected those doors to open at the same moment, guns blasting. I followed the music, crept to that door. It was ajar. I looked for a tripwire. I found nothing that was connected to a grenade. I eased the door open, and it was the same flat I had all but destroyed with sniper fire. It was Medianoche's apartment. What was left of it? He was there, dressed in four horsemen apparel, seated at a desk. He sat at a desk in a shattered room while Frank Sinatra sang of days gone by. Medianoche raised his head, squinted at me when I opened the door. He saw his oldest living enemy and tried to stand up but couldn't find his balance, then sat back in the chair. A gun was on his desk. He reached for it, but I put my hand on top of the weapon. He didn't have the strength to wrestle it from me. I took it from him, then backed away, took three steps back. Cold night air blew in from the shattered patio windows. I saw the holes I had shot in the walls. My shoes crunched broken glass while I made sure no one was in the kitchen or the bedroom. Weapon trained, expecting the unexpected, I said, "Medianoche." It took him a second, but he struggled and finally said,
"Gideon."
Must be the cleaning lady's day off.
I clean my own quarters. Always have.
So here we are.
Again, Gaucho. Again.
Round two?
If I could, I would stomp you into the floor.
If you could.
The situation has changed. Temporarily.
His eye patch was off. I saw the damage I had done to him years ago. I saw where I had shot him. It was ugly. It was enough to make a man hate another man. A fake eye was on the desk, an ocular prosthesis in a small box. He struggled to put it into the vacant socket in his scarred face. His hand wouldn't work. The eye dropped and rolled over to where I was standing. I picked it up, went over to him, rinsed the eye in a solution to prevent contamination, then helped him put it in the cavern in his head. A vial of cocaine was on his desk, too. He'd spilled it, made a mess. Something was wrong with him. The right side of his face was slack. He'd blown a fuse. No one could fake a slack face. That'd make the psychopath any less dangerous. I asked, "Get the card I left for you, Mr. Midnight?"
"I'm not your father."
I was going to leave one for every year since I've been born.
"I am not your fucking sperm donor."
"My mother said you were."
"Thelma lied. The Beast might have been your father, not me. You have a little bastard brother born in Germany. Beast was that bastard's dad. But face it, your mother is a whore, boy. Your brother is a trick baby, just like you're a trick baby. And any other baby she might have had is a trick baby. Thelma's a whore, and a good one. The line to get that pussy was like the line to get into Disney World. She was a house favorite. Thelma, the French whore in Montego Bay."
"Thelma was. Catherine isn't."
"Was a whore, always a whore. Changing your name doesn't change your character. Like I told you before, any man you pass on the street could be your goddamn sperm donor."
I looked around the room. DVDs with Cagney, Bogart, Garfield, Hayden, Mitchum, Wells, MacReady. All gangster films. A saxophone was on a sofa. I picked up the horn. I gripped it tight with my hands. Wanted to hit him. Wanted to beat him until his head was mush. I put the horn back down. I asked, "What happened to you?"
"A transient ischemic attack."
"You had a mini stroke."
"A few hours ago, after the sniper attack. The luck of the draw worked in your favor."
I'm fucking disappointed. I showed up ready to rumble.
"Same here. I wanted the same. I wanted to crush your skull."
"Lack of blood flow to the brain."
"Already had issues. The fight we had in Avisas didn't help my case."
"You're done."
"I'm not done. It took me out of the fight, but this will resolve itself within 24 hours.
"So it's not permanent?"
"It didn't kill brain tissue. Won't have permanent disabilities. I will be good as new."
"You're sitting here, dressed, waiting on it to pass."
"So I can join my team and lead them to victory."
"So, should I come back tomorrow? Should I have made an appointment?" He coughed.
"You made it past the guards."
I went horseman on two. Went Gideon on the third. Medianoche said,
"You are proficient with weapons. You are good at hand-to-hand combat. You're cunning, ruthless. You have balls. You should have been a horseman."
"Sorry, I have ethics."
"It's not too late. I can make you a horseman. You could complete the Nunca Mas contracts for me as a start. You could help me close the Captico Ortiz account."
"I don't murder wholesale. Not even now."
"I can't say that I'm not impressed."
"Well, you're pretty impressive yourself."
"Military?"
"No, not like you. Just a simple assassin."
"Who trained you?"
"Hard times, bad luck, and a few dangerous people who will remain nameless."
"The Russian?"
"He was one."
"Was he an asset?"
"Classified."
"Who trained the landscaper?"
"The streets." I picked up a chair that had been overturned. I sat facing Medianoche. We both wore dark suits and red neckties. He motioned toward his missing eye.
"You did this?"
I asked. "Why did you try and kill my mother with your bare hands?"
"It was my mission."
"Your mission?"
"The Beast sent me into the whorehouse to kill her."
"The Beast?"
"He was my leader. He was a CO. That was the mission assigned."
"Why didn't he do it himself? All of you seem like DIY kind of guys and dolls."
"He couldn't kill the slut."
"Why?"
"You don't want to know all the things your mother did, the things we paid her to do. Let's just say, no matter how many were in the room, she pleased them all, man or woman, and she was the best. He rode her raw and knocked her up. He loved her, I suppose. As much as a man can love a whore, he loved her. She loved his money. Fair exchange, maybe. He had a kid by her and couldn't look in the face of his unwanted child's mother and choke her to death.
The beast told you that he impregnated her?
He might have done it twice, if the first time was with you.
She never mentioned the beast, only you.
Women lie. Don't you watch Jerry Springer up there in the States?
Never been interested in trash television.
She thought I was dead, so lies could be put on my name. The whore told you I was your old man because she thought I was dead, and she could close the door on that issue.
I shifted, confused. What about Margaret?
Margaret.
You killed her.
I don't remember. That part hasn't come back to me. Not yet.
My mother said you killed her and left her rotting in a dumpster.
Do I seem like the type to leave a woman in a dumpster?
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
What did Thelma tell you?
She told me that my mother was a prostitute named Margaret, and Margaret had been found dead in a dumpster. She told me, when I was young, she said I'd killed my father.
And you take her word when she tells you the man she thinks is dead is your father?
Either way, you killed her best friend. You killed Margaret.
I loved Margaret when I was capable of loving. I loved her. I fell in love with a whore. But I had forgotten about her. I forgot about her when you popped me in my head. When I lost my memory, the beast rewrote her in my mind. He told me she was from Eastern Europe, a Slav. For years I thought she was Russian, Belarusian, a Ukrainian. Another lie. Another damn lie. She wasn't a Slav. She was a black girl from the islands. I remember that much now.
You're a liar.
The beast and Thelma were liars.
If the beast is dead, you can tell any lie you want.
Go look in the beast's quarters, Gaucho. Go fucking look. Tell me I'm a liar.
I motioned. Lead the way. He struggled to get up. Failed again. I helped him up. He moved like half his body was numb. Years of wars, of being a warrior. And this was what it all added up to?
This?
While he struggled, I asked, where were you from? He said,
I grew up in El Pueblo de la Reina, de Los Angeles. My father was a detached drunk, and my mother was a beautiful Romanian actress who died in the Baldwin Hills flood. He took my mother's death hard, but he didn't cry. What was done was done. He was a rough guy, physically rough and mentally rough. My father married the beast's mother. The beast's father had died. My dad needed a woman to take care of the house and cook and clean. She needed the security, and a woman needs a man to protect her from other men. Well, women used to. It was that way when I was growing up. Things have changed. Women are in the Middle East, fighting and protecting men now.
Then we were at the door to the beast's quarters. Again, I was cautious. Felt like this was a setup. I pushed the door open, saw no one inside. The apartment was as quiet as a tomb in the middle of the night, the temperature cool but not cold. I sat Medianoche in a chair. He said,
now look around and tell me what you see, Gaucho.
Tiled floors sparkled. It was a white-walled museum. Flags, trophies, valuable coins, DVDs, many military books, novels on all the wars, other novels as well. Las Venas Abiertas de la America Latina and La Noche de los Lápices, Cuban cigars, stainless steel flask and lighter. He was a well-read warrior and had a weapons qualification badge. I was surrounded by the beast's belongings. There were photographs of him in the apartment, He looked like a powerful military man, a man who jumped out of planes and fought bulls with his bare hands. La bestia de guerra. It was like staring into my brother Andrew Sven's face. My brother had the same face, had the same strong build. I asked, what's the other room?
That's where his servants slept. A gunsel named Draco.
A gunsel.
Your hoodlums killed him at the roundabout the night I kicked your ass.
I touched the books. Who was this guy? Who was the beast?
He was my best friend. He was my brother. He was my commanding officer.
Why haven't I ever heard of him?
The beast was a Paticus, a Cineidus. He was a powerful soldier, an excellent warrior. But he was a weak man. That's the nutsack you might have come from, not mine, Gaucho. He had a wife, had children, but he just did that because that is what men are supposed to do. He was with your mother because that is what men are supposed to do. That's what women are for. It never stopped him from being who he was.
You claim he sent you to kill my mother?
He betrayed me then.
We left you for dead.
On the floor of a whorehouse.
You die where you die. You die however you die, be it kicking and suffocating with a plastic bag over your head, or with a bullet to the brain, or in a falling elevator.
Well, someone found me. An ambulance came. My memory was gone. For years, decades, sections of my memory were gone. Now, bit by bit, it's starting to come back.
You didn't die. I shot you in the face, point blank, and you didn't die. That 22 should have rattled around inside of your brain. You shouldn't be here. I saw you fucking die.
You saw what you wanted to see. You saw what you needed to see. Maybe your whole mother lied. I didn't fucking die. Just part of my brain. Just part of my memory. But it's fighting to be reborn. This cavern where my eye used to be. You did this to me, Gaucho. You did this.
I barked. For trying to kill my mother. He tried to snap.
I was under orders. That was my assignment.
An assignment you failed.
I failed.
And here we are. I shot you with your own gun. That has to hurt.
That gunshot, you Gaucho fuck, has caused me problems. Now this mini-stroke.
He tried to kill my mother.
She is nobody. If she had died, the world wouldn't have missed her. I would have killed her and put a bullet in you to shut you up. Maybe you would have been the one with the one eye and a bad.